Can you talk a little bit about what you've seen in the years that you've been studying trauma and refugees and how it's changed?
We began seeing the refugees from Southeast Asia in primary health care in December of 81, and we had no financial support. We had no idea what we were doing. We just started. We thought it was important to see all these newly arrived people coming in. And now you have to remember, in 1981, in the medical profession, you know, no one had ever heard of the diagnosis of PTSD. It didn't exist. The word torture was not known. We didn't know anything about torture. When I was at Yale, I had had one lecture in 5 years on rape trauma, one-hour lecture. That's at Yale Medical School. You know. We didn't know how to diagnose people with mental health problems from other cultures. We didn't know what mental health problems look like in other cultures, you know, and it goes on and on. So we were really, really had no idea what we're doing, you know. So we decided to start seeing these people in primary health care, because they're all coming through primary health care by the hundreds of thousands throughout the country. And that's how our experience began in 81.
And in terms of what you see now, how are refugees treated now in their process?
There's been a massive transformation of the field in the last 34. I mean, we've treated over 12,000 survivors of torture and mass violence in this country over the past 33 years now, ourselves. The thing that's clear is the concept of human rights as a medical issue. In other words, the medical understanding of the health and physical and psychological impact of human rights violations is being really pretty clear to people today. That if a human being is violated and suffers a human rights violation, there's an impact to their body, their mind, and their spirit. This is well known now.
You had specific screenings for different ethnic groups.
Like, yes.
And
yeah.
The groups that we have here are so varied. Yes. And I don't think any of the groups that we have coming in right now were listed on your site. Can you talk a little bit about why you need to implement different screenings for different ethnic groups?
The reality of the situation is that certain human beings have experienced such extreme violence that they're physically, mentally, and spiritually damaged. You know, this is a small percentage. In other words, 85% of people who are refugees don't have mental health problems, you know. But a small percentage do, and so you need to really be prepared to offer, you know, comprehensive care to those small percentage of people that really have serious physical. Like, for instance, one Iraqi guy I saw who was worked for the American Army, he was severely tortured because he worked for the Americans and was resettled in our area. And he was so disturbed that he couldn't move. He couldn't move. He had intensive nightmares and flashbacks, you know, where you keep thinking about the trauma. All day long, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It was like a zombie, you know. And his torture had been brutal. His family couldn't cope with him, and they kicked him out of the house. So he became homeless, too. So he's isolated, he's homeless, he's completely disturbed. Now, from this description, you couldn't identify who he is, because there's a lot of patients like this. You know, I mean, he could be one of hundreds that have come to the United States like this. This fellow's done terrific, and he's doing very well. And so the care he received was able to really give him back his life again, you know.
What are the differences in how different cultures view trauma or view the things that they've gone through? So when you're talking about Iraqi versus Bhutanese versus like Somalian, or why do you need specific models to work with those specific groups?
Every culture has its own definition of trauma, traumatic life experiences. There are certain universal traumatic life experiences, though, that are not culturally determined. For instance, a rape of a woman or a rape of a girl or a boy is bad in all societies. That you can be Bhutanese, Nepalese, Congo, Iraq, American, whatever. Rape is rape. And gender-based violence is horrible to every human being on this planet. You know, the murder of a child is horrible to people. they can't get over that, you know. The disappearance of a family member is horrible. That crosses against all boundaries, you know. And then you begin to have different playouts around how people perceive violence and deal with it. How people are taught to cope with violence, there's a lot of cultural nuances to it. It really depends. The range of responses to trauma is very different in different societies. You know.
Is that something that providers are taught? Is that something that when you are dealing, you know, I think we have a few clinics in town that work specifically with refugees.
The basic reality is that every human being has tragedies in their life. We all have. You can't avoid tragedy in your life. It's impossible. This discovery, you know, this appreciation and this discovery of these layers and layers of history of our survival and healing, you know, from our past is, I think, a beautiful thing, unbelievably beautiful. It's exciting. We need to collect the stories of our refugees and the doctors working with the refugees and the Tatianas working with the refugees and the refugees themselves, and because these are historical histories that are disappearing, because the stories of these people are the stories for humanity of survival and healing. The stories about survival and healing. They're not just stories about, oh, this bad thing happened, that bad thing. They teach us as a civilization how to heal and how to survive. And we're just wasting these stories. We're just pissing them away. They're evaporating.
Was there anything else you'd like to add?
There's a lot of violence in this country. And what I learned is a mistake to think that you want to find survivors of violence, go to Rwanda, go to Bosnia, go, you know what I'm saying? Refugee has taught me, spending 34 years of my life working with mostly with these people who've been through extreme violence, is to look in your own backyard and try to take what I've learned from the refugee experience and apply it to my own people in my own backyard. That's the biggest thing I learned.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the interview. Yeah.